Good evening, everyone. Thank you very much to Mr. and Mrs. Zar for their beautiful hospitality. First time I'm here, Baruch Hashem. And special thank you to Simon, to Rama, to Michelle, and all the other people who help. Everybody gives credit to the speakers, but the ones who get the credit in Shamayim are the people who do the job behind the scene. Why? Because the speaker, he gets honor. People honor him, they respect him, they give him compliments. Nobody remembers the people who sweat and do all the job behind the scene. They make the calls, bring the people. They get the big reward. I always say, I had one guy, I can never overcome this story. One Georgian guy, young guy from the stock market. When I came up with my first video cassette, I don't know, 15 years ago, nobody, Baruch Hashem, and that, in those days there was no videos to make people religious. No proofs, nothing scientific. It was some audio cassettes, and that's it. Nobody made videos about it. We made the first video, it's called Informatia Elokit, maybe by now 16 years ago. And it used to be cassettes. It takes a lot of room, not like today, it's all CDs and USBs. So I gave one cassette to one guy from Las Vegas, a Jew that grew up in Las Vegas. And with this one cassette, today we have 22 Jews who are fully religious, fully Orthodox holy people, 22, from this $1 cassette. Nobody knows. They think I made them religious. It's him. It's that guy. He's behind the scene. One day he comes to Shamayim, Hashem says, "Wow, pleasure to have you." Why? See this rabbi, see this guy, see this kid learning Torah. It's all yours, all your children. You know, in investments in these worlds, many, many people are very, very smart. They know hedge funds, real estate, diamonds. They know how to buy cheap and sell expensive. Very, very special. But when it comes to spirituality, I can count on one hand how many clever people I met in the last 18 years that I do Kiruv. Why? They know the concept. They know buy cheap and sell expensive. They know it's better to have something that will benefit you residual income for eternity than a one-time profit. Everybody knows the concept. But when it comes to business, we are very successful. When it comes to spirituality, something is blinding us. We don't get the point. That's why only very few people got lucky to know the opportunity to save souls, how important it is. That's why I really compliment you for organizing this event. I didn't know what to speak about. So, Mishamayim, sometimes Hashem shows me what I have to speak about. So yesterday and today, many Persian, some Ashadi people, send me emails, some anonymously, some not, that I should speak about things that happening in the community, which is also very important. We want to make always things better. So they told me that there is a symptom in a community, that many people, Baruch Hashem, became over the last 15, 20 years more religious, more observant. I remember when I came to Great Neck for the first time 18 years ago, I spoke in Ahavat Shalom Synagogue. To the best of my knowledge, there was not one Orthodox shul in those days. It was, I think, the only one. We used to give lectures there when I still had black hair. That's where we started. And then later, well, we have today at least 20 that I can name around that came out in the last 18 years. So they told me that many people becoming more religious in one hand, but on the other hand, the behaving of the religious people, needless to say, the not religious people, is far away from what the requirements of the Torah. The requirements of the Torah. Now, why is it that some people that are very religious, they learn Torah, they keep Shabbat, they give tzedakah, they put tefillin, they pray three times in minyan, they eat very, very kosher, why is it that they behave sometimes in the lowest level of behaving? How is it possible? Because a part of the requirements in the Torah, as we all know, Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. There are two meanings to this verse. In Hebrew, Derech Eretz means way of life. That's what it really means. But it also means manners. People that have manners, now it's easy to teach them Torah. They don't have manners, what's the point of teaching them Gemara? First, teach them how to be human being, all the manners, all the laws of behaving. And after you make them according to the requirements of Hashem, now it's a lot easier to teach them Torah. Because they're accepting, they behave, they give the proper respect, they're willing to listen, they're hardworking people. It's much easier to work with them when they, chas v'shalom, live like in a zoo. Everybody understand that. But really what it means, Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah, means that Hashem is, since the time He created the world, He waited a very long time until He gave us the Torah. The Torah was given 3,320 something years ago. So it's only 3,300 years ago when the Torah was given, but the world is 5,773 years old. So it was about 2,000 years, 2,400 years after the world was created, when Hashem finally gave us the Torah. So what's going on here? Usually when you make a device, the first day that it arrives to the store, it comes with a manual, book of instruction, how to use it. Imagine someone made a new laptop or a new computer, something new, and he only give the manual 7 years after it came to the market. Make sense? Hashem created the world, right? He's the manufacturer of the world. He made us, He put us here, there's a purpose for the creation, and He only bothered to give us His true, His book of instruction 2,400 years later? The oral Torah addressed this question. Chazal, the Chachamim, our sages, they divide the world to three different categories. 2,000 years, 2,000 years, and 2,000 years. Altogether, the world is maximum 6,000 years, and you probably heard that before. But Chazal are naming 3/3 of the world is with, they have different purposes. First 2,000 years, the Gemara call it Tov Vavov. Tov. Mess, total mess, balagan. Nobody understand anything. Then 2,000 years of Torah and 2,000 years of redemption, of Mashiach. A third, a second third, and a third third. First 2,000 years from the time of Adam until Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was born 1948 to the creation and he aged 52. He started to give lectures to all the Gentiles in the world. There was no Judaism yet. Avraham, his name in the Torah is Avraham HaIvri. Ahavti et Avraham. Avraham HaIvri. The Torah called Avraham, Avraham HaIvri, with Ayin. Ivri in Hebrew means ever, one-sided. He's on one side of the world, and millions of people live in a total lie, total spiritual darkness. Not one person in the world has an idea what he lives for. Just like the animals. Nothing better. And one person finally begin to ask questions. What's going on here? Who am I? What am I doing here? Who made me? Who put me here? Cannot be put me here for nothing. Just to eat like a dog. Cannot be. I have something here. I have to find out. I cannot rest in peace not knowing my purpose in life. I'm different than the animals. I choose between good and bad. The dog cannot choose. He lives with the instinct. The chimpanzee, he always will behave the same. The lion will always behave the same. If the lion is hungry, there's no way to stop him. You can't tell him, please don't attack the sheep because we didn't finish to take pictures. There's nobody to talk to. When a person is very hungry, you say, hey, Mr. X, can you wait 10 minutes before you attack the food? Okay, I'll wait. He's very hungry, but he's controlling his desire. By the animals, it's instinct. They see fire, they run away. They see water, they jump in. They see food, they attack. They see someone they hate, they bite. There's nothing, there's no negotiation with animals. They're robots. Nobody ever put a lion in jail. No one has ever held any animal guilty. An animal can, chas v'shalom, kill a whole innocent baby. There's nothing you can do to it. What are you going to do? Put him in an electric chair? Bring him into the courtroom. Everybody understands, it's a lion. What do you expect? A person smacks someone, he can find himself in court and in jail tomorrow. Why? Because he could have done otherwise. So Avraham Avinu started to analyze what's going on. He said, look what's happening. Thousands of people. Everyone has a different belief. He bowed down to the sun. He bowed down to the moon. He bowed down to the trees. He bowed down to the rivers. Everyone has a different God. Everyone is searching for something different. Cannot be. What's going on here? So he started to say, dear Creator, if you're out there, please come, tell me why you made me for. Whoever made me, that's how he started, since he was a little kid. Very little, very small kid. Some Chazal say 3 years old already, he started to understand what's happening here. And then, when he was 52 years old, he was already the complete person who started to preach about Hashem and about one God. That's why Judaism spread to the world, monotheism. You know, Islam, for instance, and Muslims that follow the Quran, even though the Quran is not a divine book, it's full of human errors, as I show in my Torah and science film. But even though you follow a man-made religion, which is full of human errors, but is not an idol worshiper, because they believe in the same God we believe in. We call him Allah, we call him El. Obviously, 90% of the words in Arabic have Hebrew words. If you know a little bit Arabic, maybe not 90%, but at least 70%. Every other word is an Hebrew word with some, you know, some minor change. So obviously they copy a lot from the Torah. When Muhammad brought the Quran, he said that Angel Gabriel gave him the Quran. How did he have an idea there's such a thing, Angel Gabriel? He saw in the Torah, the Jews have Malach Gabriel. And he made up the story that he gave him the Quran. 10 years later, four of his wife, each one of them had a different version of the Quran. It was a divine book. How come each one of your wives have a different version? Which one God gave, in case he did? It's already gone. Already 25% chance that it's true. This woman, she has one Quran. It's only 25% chance that it's divine. It's either a divine book or toilet paper. There's no in between. If it's God's book, that's 100% a book. That's it. If it's not God's book, it's nothing. It's a napkin. It can be a lot of wisdom in it. But you know how many books has wisdom in it? So what? We're going to dedicate our entire life to some smart person who wrote a book? Or if it's the book of God, it's a different story. Then today you have hundreds of different Qurans. So the chance that the Quran you're holding is the book of God is less than 0.0%. If it was divine ever, we know for sure it wasn't. If it was, now the one that I'm holding, the chance that it's divine is 0.01%. Christianity, there's no chance whatsoever. There's more than 200,000 different books. 200,000. More than 200,000 New Testament with different versions, different texts. So if one of them was divine, go find which one it was. There's no way to know. Baruch Hashem, we are the Jews, only 13.2 million people in a world of 7 billion people, in a world of more than 2 million different species, 2 million names of animals we know in the archives. Each family have billions or trillions of animals out there. 72% of the world is water, full of billions and trillions of fish and all kinds of creatures. And only 13.2 million Jews. And from the 13.2 million children of God, how many of them listens to him? About 2 million only. 11 million live in a total spiritual darkness. No Shabbat, no kosher, no tefillin, no kosher marriage, nothing whatsoever. Nothing. They don't know. Maybe they know a little bit about holidays, but the way they celebrate the holidays obviously have nothing to do with what the Torah requires. So 2 million are observant of the book of God. Torah means in Hebrew instructions. From the 2 million people, how many can raise their hand and they say, there's 1 hour in my life that I don't sin? I'm afraid to raise my hand. Sinning doesn't mean to be a rapist or a murderer or mechalel Shabbat. Sinning can be in minor things that may look minor in our eyes, but it's very heavy in the eyes of the Creator of the world. For instance, lo tachmod, lo titave. It's halachot that almost nobody pays attention to. Lo telech rachil be'amach. Let me explain. Do you know That if a person is jealous with something that he sees that somebody else has in his heart, even for 1 second, it's already a sin from the Torah, exactly like eating pork. Did you know that or no? There's no difference in the Torah which one is worse. Torah said this is a restriction from God and this is a restriction from God. Now we love to make a big deal out of someone who eats pork. Oh, he eats chazir. Wow. He, the one who criticizes him is much worse. Why? Because he's jealous every second of his life with every person nearby. So who's worse? We don't know. Hashem knows. But some of the mitzvot and the restrictions are luckier than the other. I'll give you a few examples what I mean. The Gemara say, Hakol talui b'mazal, afilu sefer Torah sheba'echal. Everything is subject to fortune. Fortune, mazal. Even the Sefer Torah inside the ark. Why Chazal gave this example? You know, today, Baruch Hashem, almost in every respectable synagogue that you go in the world, Brooklyn, Great Neck, Manhattan, anywhere, Israel, we find that they are overloaded with Torah scrolls. When I say overloaded, I mean inside the ark, if it's a big fancy ark, you can fit 9 Sifre Torah. Sometimes they have 3 different levels, sometimes it's very wide. 9 approximately is the maximum we can push in, stuff them in. But how many they have? Another 80 in a basement, standing over there. Why? Every week there's a Hnasat Sefer Torah. Every week a family that they have a dear father or mother that passed away, they want to do something for their memory, so they spend $80,000, they buy a nice, beautiful Sefer Torah, they put a beautiful silver case, it's about $70,000. They do Achnasat Sefer Torah, they pay another $20,000-$30,000 for the party and the catering, so now they're more than $100,000 into a very important mitzvah in their eyes. In reality, one CD that I'm giving you here tonight, free, you're getting it for free, but it costs $1 to make. It's a bigger mitzvah than this $110,000 mitzvah that they do. Bigger mitzvah. Why? Because you give it to a person and he listens to 30 hours of Divrei Torah. And then he gives it to his wife and she listens, and the son and the neighbor and a friend. It can be already 200 hours of learning Torah. That's already, in an average minute, the Chafetz Chaim did a calculation. A person can read 200 words in 1 minute, and each word has, in average, 5 letters. So each letter, it's a mitzvah from the Torah. If you say a word that it's written in the Torah, you say the word Esav. You say the word Bil'am. You read it from the Torah. Well, Bil'am was a very big, wicked prophet of the Goyim. Bil'am! Ma Bil'am? What are you? From all the words in the Torah, you chose the word Bil'am? Achot Lotan Timna, the Gemara says. It's a sentence that looks completely not relevant. It's already achot. It's 4 letters. Lotan, 4 letters. Timna, 4 letters. 12 times you put filin. It's like saying, Yasser Arafat, sister Fatma. Already 12 mitzvot from the Torah, if it was written in the Torah. There's no... say Moshe Rabbeinu got the Aseret Adibrot. Rabbi, why Bil'am? How the Ashkenazi Sidur begins? Did you ever see? First verse that the Ashkenazim say in the morning. What is it? Ma tovu o'alecha Yaakov mishkanotecha Israel. Who said this verse? Bil'am HaTzadik. Bil'am, the husband of his donkey. That's what he was. His wife was his donkey, Bil'am. Bil'am said this in the Torah. I don't understand our brothers, the Ashkenazim. They have so many thousands of holy names, Jewish, holy rabbis, from Moshe Rabbeinu until now. They couldn't start the Chumash with something that Rabbi Akiva said, or Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the Sidur, or Moshe Rabbeinu. Why Bil'am? So why? Because they wanted to send the message. The truth is above any politic. Let me explain. In life, when somebody comes and is not considered an important person, he's not an important rabbi, he's not a famous rabbi, he's not old enough, he's not so successful in his lifetime. So if he says something, not that many people care. Who say that? Who is he? We don't know him. Okay, so he said. Sir, Rav Ovadia Yosef say. Okay. Rav Steinman say. I understand. Where is he? He's a rabbi in a school. He's melamed children. I was worried. So there's a question in halacha. If you know, you say the truth. And they ask you, where did you read it? Are you allowed to say, I heard the Rambam saying it. I heard Rav Ovadia Yosef saying it, even though he never said it. Why? Because the people won't accept from you. If you say, I said it, nobody listens. If you say, Rav Steinman say it, we have to do what the big rabbi said. We have to do. Why is it? Because the truth is above who said it. If a Hamas terrorist said something from the Torah, it's still true, like Moshe Rabbeinu said it. The Torah never changed by which mouth said it. If we have an option where to learn Torah, from Rabbi Akiva or from a terrorist, of course we're going to learn from Rabbi Akiva. What's the question? We want a holy mouth, not a mouth of a murderer. But if a murderer says something to me and he's right, he say, you just violated your Torah. I'll give you an example. There was one Israeli soldier, his name was Rami, Israeli soldier in Yom Kippur War. He was captured by the Egyptians after the war. It was a horrible war, thousands of soldiers died, many casualties. We survived in the last minute by a huge miracle. So nobody understands how the Arabs that were occupying Israel by the minutes, all of a sudden decided to stop. Another hour they'll be in Tel Aviv, that's it, no Israel. All of a sudden, the Arabs, something got into their mind. It cannot be the Israelis are so stupid. It cannot be. In a previous war, in a six-day war, they destroyed us in minutes. Now, all of a sudden, we're traveling into Tel Aviv and not one gunshot? What's going on? It cannot be. It's an ambush. It's a trick. They're waiting for us to go in while they're surrounding us and they will butcher us inside. One of them screamed. Until today, they never found the general who screamed to stop. They're still looking for him. Nobody ever found him. Maybe Hashem sent an angel. Somebody started to scream in Arabic. Everyone pause. Stop. Not one more inch to go forward. That gave the Israeli time to leave the synagogues, to put uniforms, to get in a tank, and go to the war. Nobody was ready. The intelligent made a big mistake in their assumption, what's going to happen. They got caught not ready at all. And somehow we survived. Moshe Dayan was the minister of the army. This is his words. He say, Chorban Bayit Shlishi. Bet HaMikdash was destroyed once by the Babylonians 2600 years ago, and then by the Romans 2000 years ago. And Moshe Dayan say, it's Chorban Bayit Shlishi, it's the destruction of Israel for the third time. That's how horrible the situation was. They already had atomic bombs on a plane. They already said, if we are destroyed, we'll destroy as many as we can with us. That's how bad it was. So one soldier, his name was Rami, he was captured by the Egyptians, he was an artist. He paint beautiful pictures, artist. So Mustafa, the terrorist, was interrogating him. He was in jail. They torture, horrible tortures over there. And what they used to do is to destroy the soldiers mentally, not only physically, mentally. Everybody knows mentally is much worse than physically. So what they used to do, they used to open the door and pretend that they forgot the door unlocked. And then all of a sudden the window is also open. So the soldier looks around, it's an opportunity to escape. Few days I run in a desert, I cross the border to Israel. I scream, I'm a Jew, don't shoot. And I can get safe from this Gehenom, this hell. So he comes out, no one's there. You see the window, he jumped out, he comes out, it's a grass. There's one fence. I jump above the fence and I'm free. That's it, I run, night. He comes to the fence, he's climbing on the fence. Oh, the Arab shows up, you think we're stupid, huh? They catch him, they bring him back to the bunker, and the tortures begin. So this is an interview with Rami, maybe 10 years ago. In the Yom Kippur magazine, every year they have the newspaper which the people describe what happened to them. So this is what Rami says. The Arabs say to him, since you thought that you can escape, we must punish you. So we're going to chop one of your hands. But we'll be nice with you. We'll let you choose which hand. So Rami thought, I'm an artist, I'm painting. So chop my left hand. So the Arab murderer told him, to chop your left hand? You're not ashamed of yourself? Are you a Jew? How are you going to put tefillin? You don't care what God say to you to do? You care about your stupid pictures? This is Rami, the secular Jew. Until today, he's mentally ill for the rest of his life. Get some pension from the government, cannot function. They destroy him mentally. Live in a little room, his life is over. But he described what they did to him, and he said, that's what the Arab told me. Now, Rami wasn't giving a Musar lecture. It's not a rabbi. By the way, as he said the story, I got the shock of my life when I heard this. Look what the Arab told him. You don't care about Hashem? You want to draw pictures? You should beg for your left arm. If we take away your arm, you lose the mitzvah of tefillin. Mitzvah tefillin, oti b'ni u'v'nechem, v'haya le'ot al yadecha. Hashem made three covenants with us. Shin, Bet, Taf, Shabbat. Shin, Bet, Taf, Shabbat. Shin, Shabbat. Bet, Brit Milah, Taf, Tefillin. Three covenants. Hashem say, you want to be a kosher Jew for me? You must have two covenants in your life every day. So in the weekdays, when we don't observe the Sabbath, it's the circumcision and the Tefillin. That's two witnesses to testify you belong to me. Shabbat, you don't put tefillin. Shabbat and circumcision, two witnesses. The rabbis ask a question. What if a person could not have a circumcision? Why? The halacha say, if chas v'shalom, two babies died in a circumcision, it happens. Sometimes people, blood cannot clogged, and they lose blood, and then the baby can die, chas v'shalom. So if two babies died, you cannot have a brit milah to the third one. Not allowed. That's hereditary in a family. So now he's a Jew, but he's Arel. He doesn't have Brit Milah. So they ask, since he doesn't have Brit Milah, on Shabbat, is he allowed to put tefillin or no? Shabbat, you don't put tefillin. It's Muktzeh. The answer is yes. He cannot have that testimony on him. So what does he do? At least one day of the week, he put tefillin. Shabbat and tefillin, he has it. You understand? So we're showing you that Hashem made it three covenants. Tefillin is ot, v'haya le'ot al yadecha. Only three times the Torah used the word ot. Ot in Hebrew means siman, a sign. V'haya le'ot al yadecha, v'haya le'ot bebesar orlatchem, oti b'ni u'v'nechem, on Shabbat. Three things. So now, the Torah gave us 613 laws, 248 positive mitzvot, 365 restrictions. The body of the human being has 248 organs, 365 ligaments. For every ligament in the body, there's a restriction in the Torah. 365 restriction, 355 ligaments. 248 organs, 248 positive mitzvot. One day when a person passed away, the soul exits the body. By looking at the spiritual image of the soul, who does look exactly like the body, without physic, without material, just an image, you can already see which mitzvot the person kept, which mitzvot he ignored, which restriction he respected, which restriction he ignored. What is it like? Imagine a picture of a person from A to Z, from head to toe, a picture. And the machine cut the picture to 613 parts and turned it into a puzzle. 613 parts. Each organ is a piece. Each ligament is a piece. Together, there's an image of a person. Now, if, for instance, he wasn't putting tefillin, so a part of the hand is missing, Every mitzvah linked to one of the organs, we don't know the list anymore today. We used to know 2,000 years ago. Some of the knowledge, unfortunately, disappeared. But the Ari HaKadosh, if you told him what organ hurts in your body, he'll tell you right away which mitzvah you're not keeping and which restriction you're violating. Right away, in a second, only doctor, specialist, MRI, nothing. Go, next time you be in Israel, you stand next to his grave in Tzfat. There's a big tombstone over there. Describe all the abilities that he had. If you won't know we're talking about the Ari HaKadosh, you will think we're speaking about God himself. He had divine, and only 500 years ago. Reads people's mind. Look at the person's forehead, and he knows all the reincarnation that he had before he came to this world. In which bodies, which names, what sins he used to do, what mitzvot he used to keep. He used to look at the rock and tell his student, Rabbi Chaim Vital, do you remember there was a butcher who slaughtered the animal 20 years ago in this town? Rabbi Chaim Vital said, I don't know, I never heard. He said, he used to make this sin and is reincarnated in this rock. And they used to go to the town, the student, and they check. Tell me, there was anyone by this name living 20, 30 years ago in this town? They say, yes. Was he a butcher? Yes. Was he working over here? Yes. Everything the Ari was saying, they went and checked. We don't have people like this today. What do we know? I said a few days ago in my lecture in Brooklyn, you know, people today think that if you come to a rabbi and he has like a computer, he presses the button and hocus pocus, everything, the reality change. Rabbi, I have this and this and that. I just lost $1 million in a bad deal. The rabbi says, wait 1 second. The million is wired back into your account. Rabbi, my daughter has this sickness, chas v'shalom. Okay, rabbi says, okay, it's over. Goodbye. That's what people think. That's why they stand 4 hours on lines in different places thinking they're going to make hocus pocus and some magic for them. They don't understand that if you don't do what Hashem wants, you have a problem with Hashem, not with the rabbi. The rabbi can try, like a lawyer try in a court. The lawyer can change anything. If a person murdered, the lawyer can say he's a wonderful person, he did a lot for the community. The judge care. You're talking about a murder here. You're not talking stealing $200 from someone's account. We're talking serious violation. The lawyer can help a little bit, but the lawyers are limited. Even the judge is limited. Believe me, the judge loves him. Let's see, he's an Orthodox Jew. I have a friend, he's a judge in San Diego. Modern Orthodox Jew. He says, sometimes a Jew comes, I have to judge him. It burns my heart. What can I do? If I won't judge him, they appeal the case, it's going to get worse than what I give him. Better I give him the minimum in the law, then they appeal the case and another judge will double the punishment. He's sending him to jail and actually he's doing him a favor. But it burns his heart because he's limited. Even Hashem is limited. How can it be, chas v'shalom, to say such a thing? Once Hashem gave us a constitution called Torah, what does the Torah say? I am faithful to pay endless reward to my followers for eternity. Not for 30, 40 years. This world is a blink of the eye. Before you realize it's over. Before you realize, whoops, 7 years are gone. All these illusions, infatuation, pleasure, vacations, good food, traveling, all these things that people run after. When the time life is over, I promise you they won't remember 1 minute of this phony pleasure. They will deal with a complete new situation now they have to deal with. Did I listen to my Creator or I rebelled against Him? That's the bottom line, the main question that a person would have to deal with. The most righteous people in history were shaking and crying moments before they passed away. The Gemara says Rabbi Yochanan was crying, shaking, his hands were shaking. His student told him, Rabbi, why are you so afraid? He said, if I'm going in front of a human being judge, that maybe I can bribe him, maybe I can use some connections to change his mind against me, you know, about me, I would still be so nervous. Now I'm going in front of an honest judge, nobody can bribe him, I won't be shaking. So the student told him, Rabbi, since you're such a tzaddik, such a perfect rabbi, you might as well give us a blessing before you leave us. He was 120 years old, moments before he passed away in his bed. You know what the blessing he gave them? Who knows the blessing? What's the blessing?
If you're in a place and you want to commit a sin, you always look around and you want to make sure nobody's watching you. He say always before you want to commit sin, think that everybody's watching you.
Almost perfect what you say. Let me a little bit correct with your permission. It says like this: you should always fear God like you fear people. That's that one sentence. When I read this Gemara for the first time in my life, I said to myself, from all the blessings in the world, that's what the blessing the rabbi had to give to his students that learned Torah by him all their lives. Couldn't find something better. You should be big Talmidei Chachamim, should always be healthy, you should have great marriage, you should have lots of parnasa. What? You should fear God like you fear the policeman on the highway. That's basically what he told them. I was thinking to myself, what kind of blessing is this? Chas v'shalom, to compare God to some human being that we're afraid of? But one time I drove on the Palisades Parkway to Monsey, 2 o'clock at night. You're allowed 50. I don't want to tell you on what speed I was. I was already exhausted after a long day of Torah and people. Like dying to get home already. All of a sudden from the jungle of the, you know, it's a big forest over there. Some kind of, you know, like a marine with all the things. Like just caught Bin Laden. Ooh, the sirens, these, come with the hands with the gun, see me with the tie, these, still wearing, worry with the flashlight, maybe I pull my machine gun. So he said, driver's license and registration. I was looking for it, and I started to see that my head was shaking. Mamash, like shaking, like this. I said, I can't control it. Wow, can't pick up the papers. You have to look for the papers in the glove compartment. I give him the papers and all that. Persian wedding for free. It's been a while since I've been in a Persian wedding. It's buy one, get one free. You get a you came to the lecture, you get a wedding for free. So, after I finished with him, whatever, I sat there for a few minutes, this Gemara came to my head. I say, wow, not once in my life I was afraid of my sins that I did in front of Hashem like this moment. If one time in my life after I finish saying something not good, or looking at something not good, or eating something that is a little bit questionable, or who knows what, we're full of mistakes, I felt like I felt now, I know I would be a perfect tzaddik. Now I understand what Rabbi Yochanan said. If you fear God like you fear people, I remember when I came to America, I was 21 years old, I finished the army, I came here. I was only here a few weeks. I got a ticket, so I had to go to the court, downtown. So I went to downtown, never been in a court in my life before here. I see this Judge Williams over there, sitting over there. A black non-Jew judge is the judge over there. And I'm sitting in the audience waiting for them to call my name. So what a person that sits in the audience do? He reads a newspaper. I brought a newspaper with me. I read the newspaper. All of a sudden, the judge realized that I'm reading newspaper in his courtroom. He got up like this, in the middle. In front, you know how many people waiting for the line? You! I say to myself, it better be somebody sit behind me. I turn around, wow, I'm the last row. You, I said, me, yes, you, arrest him. The policeman standing over there, arrest him. Contempt of the court, take him, arrest him. I said, what happened here? Go outside, I have no idea what's happening here. I said to the policeman over there, what happened, what did I do? He said, you don't know, you're not allowed to read newspaper in the face of the judge in the court? I said, I really don't know, I'm only a few weeks here. He said, listen, wait right here. Let the judge relax, I know him. When it's going to be break, I'm going to speak to him. Then after an hour, he came and said, listen, I spoke to the judge. I told him, you the fool, you just came from Israel. I never was so happy to be called a fool. How my heart was pumping, boom, boom, boom. 21 years old, they'll take me to jail in America. Who knows? I saw a lot of movie about the mafia in Chicago when I was a kid. They put me over there. Who knows if I ever come out of there for reading newspaper? You know, you don't know what to expect. We never fear Hashem like this. Ah, Rabbi, don't be fanatic. Why are you so strict? Hashem understand us. Hashem is merciful. Hashem is this. Hashem is that. Everyone wants to convince themselves that whatever we do, everything will be fine. But I'm a rational person. I go with what the Torah says. I'm not counting on miracles that in the end I'll be very disappointed. I want to know what my odds. I read what the Torah says. That's one way to examine the Torah and Hashem. Second way is we check in the history. The Gemara says, "En chacham ela kebal nisayon." Who is a wise person? A person that has experience, life experience. The older people, they know better than the young, because they've seen it happening hundreds of times. The kids always think they're smarter than the parents. But one day, 20 years later, when they talk to their own children, they remember how I didn't listen to my father. If I only listened to him, he was so right. People that are older, they have experience. They may not be so smart and genius, but life experience worth fortune. The Rambam say, there are three things to examine the truth. The five senses, human logic, and experience, life experience. If a person has experience, something repeats many, many times, he knows it's always going to be the same. If he doesn't have experience, he doesn't know what to expect. So this is it. We review now, we're looking inside the Torah, and we see that Hashem did not tell us necessarily which sins are worse than the other. We know the worst sins in the Torah is to murder, to be mechalel Shabbat, to worship idols. There's a list of big sins in the Torah that everybody understands. That's already the top violations. But there are many sins that almost nobody talks about. And this is what we have today in our society. Not only here, everywhere you go. Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan, Israel. People are not satisfied with what they have. No matter what they have, they want more. And when somebody else have it, it burns their heart. There are three different kinds of jealous people. Jealousy, it's a mental disease. Not only schizophrenics are mental. Not only bipolar, it's a mental disorder. We are used to certain sicknesses that everybody understands that there are mental issues. But we go by the Torah, we have much more mental issues than what we recognize. For instance, being stingy, not want to do anything for others, that's a mental sickness. Being angry, it's a mental sickness. Being jealous, everything you see you want to be yours, and if somebody else has some good time, it burns your heart. Even if you have 100 times more than him. It's his first deal in his life. You made 100 already. Your eyes is on his deal. Your car is $300,000. He just bought a $20,000 car. It burns his heart. I give you an example. There used to be Rav Zusha. Many of the Hasidim stories is based on him. It was a big tzaddik. Rav Zusha one time was sitting in a train, and he put his hand out of the window before the train started to go, and accidentally a glove fell from his hand. Now he had another glove. So he took the other glove, and he threw it also on a truck. So his student told him, "Rabbi, not only you lost one beautiful leather glove with fur inside, now each glove is $100. Why you threw this glove also?" So he told him, "Listen, what would I do with one glove? I cannot go one glove on, one glove without it. So there's nothing I can do. So the person who will find my glove, also there's nothing he can do. Since I cannot go now on the trucks to pick it up, I'm here. Let the person at least have two pairs, two of them." That looks very simple. It's mandatory. Every normal person should have done it. But how many people really would do it from 100%? 5%? 10%? Do you know how many people I asked this question and they told me, "I'll tell you the truth, my heart wouldn't let me throw the second glove. If I can't have it, nobody will have it. It's my way or the highway." Like in Israel, when the kids play soccer in a school, there's always this guy who bullies everyone. He comes, "So I want to play." But nobody wants to play with him. Scream, he cares. Say, "No, no, you play next." "No." He takes the ball. "No game." You have to let him play. If not, nobody play. "I don't play, nobody play." or he owns the ball. And he's not happy the way the game is. So he said, okay, I have to go. 50 people came all the way to the park. They were waiting all week to do some sport. He doesn't like his team. They're not, you know, this time he doesn't. I have to go. Give me the ball. Okay, leave the ball. We'll bring it to your house. No. I have to go. Give me the ball. Right? Happens all the time. There are three different kinds of jealous. Two are negative, one positive. How jealousy can be positive in any way? The Torah says, "Kinat sofrim tarbe chokhmah." If you are jealous with the rabbi, with his wisdom, not only it's not a sin, it's a big mitzvah. I wish I was like him. Wow. Imagine if I only have the memory of Rav Ovadia. That's the way you should think. Imagine if I knew 5% of what he knows. Imagine if I had the head of this rabbi or that rabbi. You have here in this community, perhaps the biggest rabbi in America. He may not make a show and doesn't wear all kinds of things and doesn't pretend he's Eliyahu Navi, but if you put him on a scale compared to perhaps anyone here in America, it's probably much, much heavier in Torah knowledge. Computer. Humble, down to earth, simple, speak to every kid. Sometimes it's a danger. When you're too humble, people disrespect you. The Gemara say, Rav Kahana had a son, his name was Salik. Salik. When he was 5 years old, they wanted to send him away to yeshiva. It wasn't like today, you get in a school bus with air condition, and 10 minutes later you sit in a beautiful yeshiva, $20 million building, and you learn Torah. It wasn't like that. You want to go learn Torah? What do you think, there's a school bus? You have to go 10, 12 years. Next time your mother will see you, you'll have a beard. You went there 5 years old, you came back 17, you already have a beard and peot. Who are you, sir? What do you mean, who? I'm your son. Last time, there's no telephone, Skype. Mommy, the food in the yeshiva is not so fresh. It was a different world. So now, Rav Kahana wants to send his son. She said, no, I cannot live without my son next to me. So Rav Kahana said, listen, we are babysitters. Hashem gave us a treasure. This soul belongs to Hashem. We only have to raise him. It's not our children. It's the children of Hashem. He trusted us. He gave us this soul. We have to do the best we can to raise him in the best way. So, we cannot do what we like. We have to do what's right. She said, I'm very sorry. I cannot live without him. I can't live without him. So the conclusion was that they went to Beit Din and they want to get divorced. Not like today. Every little thing, right away, rabbi, we want to get divorced. Why? There's too much toys when I come home from work on the floor. That's why I want to divorce you. I see it every day. One rabbi came to the Beit Din, to the rabbi. He said, rabbi, I have to give my wife a get. I can't take this anymore. So the rabbi said, what's the problem? He said, she doesn't clean. The house is a mess. I can't live this kind of life. I come home, such a zoo, the house. Tomorrow I want to get a get. The rabbi said, no problem. Tomorrow 1 o'clock you come and we'll write the get. So he said to his wife, tomorrow, 12:45, make sure this house look like a zoo. Take all the chocolate milk, throw it on the wall, take all the sheets on the floor, books on everything. Make the house look like a nightmare. So the wife said, what happened? She said, don't ask questions, just do it. Okay. The next day, the guy comes in, see toys, dirt, garbage bag in the kitchen on the floor. Oh, why? So he said, Rabbi, remind me why you come for, what's the reason of the get? He said, you know, Rabbi, and actually on the second thought, maybe I'm a little bit too rushed. Okay. He said, I'm complaining about her. Look what's the rabbi's wife. And he doesn't even care. The garbage is under his legs. He gave him in 1 minute the right understanding. Don't complain. Appreciate what you have. So Salik, now his parents wants to get divorced. Why? The future of the soul. The father says, it's my obligation. I'm his father. I have to teach him Torah. I cannot sit and teach him Torah 20 years. I want to send him to a good yeshiva. She doesn't let. I can't be her husband anymore. Let me get divorced. The rabbis don't want to make divorce. The Torah says when a couple get divorced, Hashem is crying. The Mizbeach is having tears. The altar of Hashem in Beit HaMikdash is tearing. It's a horrible thing. It's not like today, every little thing, yalla, divorce, divorce, divorce. I have a whole lecture about divorce. Many people wanted to get divorced. They saw that lecture, right away they changed their mind. So, Salik, the rabbi said to Salik, let me ask you a question to the mother. If he stayed home, would you lend him? Would Rav Kahana would hire a rabbi that come and teach him every day, would you cook for them and do everything for them? She said, yes. I'll cook, I'll do everything, as long as my son learn at home. So he went to the room with the rabbi. 25 years he learned Torah. 25 years non-stop, without going out to the street once. All day the rabbi come from morning to night, they learn Torah. And what happened? When he was 30 years old, the rabbi came to his father, Rav Kahana. He said, Rabbi, I'm afraid to steal your money. You don't have to pay me to teach your son. Your son is a very big chacham. He knows everything. He knows everything. What am I teaching him? He knows just whatever I know, he knows. There's no point. He doesn't need a rabbi anymore. So he says, Rav Kahana say, okay, thank you very much. So now Salik, for the first time after 25 years, went to the market. The food market. You know, there are booths. They sell lemonades, meat, spices, fruit, vegetables. You know how it is. So Salik, 30 years old, he doesn't have one penny in his pocket because he was in yeshiva for 25 years. He never worked, he never did anything. He walks in the street, he comes to a booth, he sees a Jew sell lemonade, squeeze lemonade. He come to him and say, can you give me a glass of lemonade for free? So the Jew say to him, why for free? It's my business. It's my parnasa. He said to him, I don't have money. I learned in a room now for 25 years. It's the first day I'm out of the house after 25 years. Therefore, I don't have money. So the guy say to him, good for you. But what's in it for me? This is my business here. Go work, make money, come back. I'll sell you lemonade. He got so upset. He went home. He got so angry. He took his coat. He threw it on the couch. His mother said, what happened? His father, what happened? He said, why did I learn Torah 25 years? I just realized it doesn't even get me a glass of lemonade. 25 years I killed myself learning nonstop. I know all the Torah. One glass of lemonade I can't get for it. And the people who don't know how to read and write, they have all kinds of things. And what do I don't have a glass of lemonade? It was crazy. It went crazy. So his father knew when a person is boiling, you don't give him ethics. Let him relax first. In the evening, he came to him and said, son, you see this diamond? I want you tomorrow to go to the market and appraise it. Go to all the booths where you went today. Ask them how much they're willing to give you for this diamond. So his son said, okay. Father said, I do it. He took a piece of paper, he took the diamond, and he went. He come to one booth, how much would you give me for this diamond, Mr. Tehrani? He looks at that, he says, $700. So he write it down, $700. He went to Mr. Isfahani, how much you give me? He say, $1,100. Wow, we're making a progress. He went to all the people, Mr. Gavrielov, Mr. Dees, Mr. Cohen, everyone. By now, $2,000 you already have for the diamond. Well, we made a progress. By the end of the day, up to $5,000, the boy said, wow, Baruch Hashem, we have something valuable. He came to his father, Rav Kahana, he looked at the list, he smiled. He said, tomorrow I'm sending you again, but to a different market. Just one more day and that's it, and I leave you alone. Now I'm sending you to 47th Street and 5th Avenue. Until now I send you to the food market. You know, they gave you up to $5,000, Baruch Hashem. Tomorrow I'm sending you to 47th Street. Okay. The next day he comes, he goes to the first store. I look at the diamond. I give you 1.2. So Salik said, 1.2 what? Dollar? He said, million, you fool. What were dollar? 1.2 million? Write it down. His hand started to shake. He comes to the next one. How much he gave me? 1.2. He's a crook. Don't listen to him. All his family are crooks. Come to me, I'll give you 1.7. After going all day, he got already to $300 million for this diamond. And he said, I don't understand. Yesterday, the lemonade guy wanted to give me $700 for it. Not only he doesn't want to give me $2 lemonade, he wants to steal the diamond from me. So he comes to his father. He said, I didn't know he's so rich. So his father smiled. So he said to him, but why did you send me? You already knew the diamond worth hundreds of millions. Special color diamond, big 10-carat diamond. So he said to him, I wanted to teach you, my son, in this world, how many people knows the real value of a precious color diamond? Most people look at that as a piece of glass. They don't even know it's worth something. It'll be on the floor. Some people won't even pick it up. The people who finally know about diamonds, not everybody knows that it's a special pink or blue color, whatever. It's hard to see. You have to know a little bit more. Finally, when you went to this foolish lemonade guy, what did he ever hold a diamond in his life? He gives you $700. He thinks he buy a piece of glass. And the people who knew it, they offered you 300 because they sell it for 500. What do you think? So he told them, this is the way the world is. In this world, how many people cherish and evaluate Torah? 1 to 1 million? The lemonade guy, when you came to him, if he only knew what Torah is, he would grab your hand and start to kiss it 1 million times and kiss your feet. Thank you, Salik, for choosing me, that you want me to give you lemonade for free. Take the whole store for you. Come, please. Don't ask anymore. Bring your friends. Your store, my store is your store. You want my house? Come sleep in my house. Please, let me touch you. I one time was in Brooklyn, 15 years ago. Rav Ovadia Yosef came in Purim, a few days before Purim, to speak in Chaim Shaul synagogue. The size of the shul is like this big room. That's it. How many people you think was in this room to see him? In this room, size of this room exactly is the shul. The Aron Kodesh is here. It's wide, like this. And the Aron Kodesh. Size of this pretty big room. How many people you can fit in this room? Do you believe me that 1,000 people was in this room? You know what sardines are? I went there 1.5 hours before the lecture because I wanted to place my camera in his face. I saw where the chair, the big chair, and there's a table. I knew in order for me to take a good video, I have to be the first line. So I went a lot before. It was empty when I got there. I placed my camera mamash in his face. And when he walked in, first time in my life I saw such a thing. 1,000 people in the room are pushing and about 7-8 guys are trying. What are they trying? To grab his sleeve, to kiss the sleeve. Like they saw Hashem. Like this, they're kissing his sleeve. I wasn't aware yet what is a chacham. Someone who knows all the Torah, how important it is in Shamayim. If I knew 1% of what I know today, I would jump on him and kiss him on the head. I thought, what crazy people. So barbarians. What am I joining here? That's why I'm an intelligent guy, you know. What am I doing here? Pushing. Today I'm eating my heart. I had an opportunity. Rabbi. I was the first row. But I didn't know yet what I know today. That's what happened today. People don't understand what it means to be Talmid Chacham. The Gemara said, Talmid Chacham, he make a decree, Hashem cancel his decree and respect him to do what he did. Avraham Avinu was one person in the world. Hashem wants to make a holocaust to the people of Sodom and Gomorrah. 5 major cities, the most important business city in the world. Imagine, 5 like Manhattan, attached. Hashem wants to destroy everyone wicked. Avraham Avinu, Hashem said, how can I do it without consulting with my son Avraham? It's not nice to do. How can I do such a thing? Avraham, you know I'm going to do it? That's what I'm going to do to them. So Avraham started to say, how, Hashem, you're going to kill the wicked, the righteous people with the wicked people? Where is the justice? He became a lawyer for people who used to do the most horrible sin you can imagine. You know what they used to do in Sodom and Gomorrah? They used to torture guests. They used to steal. They used to the two men marry one woman in the same house. That's how it was. All kinds of horrible, horrible sins that you cannot even imagine they used to do. And Avraham Avinu was fighting that Hashem won't destroy them. Won't destroy them. And Hashem have a dialogue with Avraham Avinu with lots of patience. Okay, as you wish. Find 50 righteous people, 10 in each place, I don't touch them. What do we learn from the dialogue? That Hashem said, if in a city like Manhattan that has 10 million people, if everyone will be fully wicked, fully, but there will be 10 righteous people, everyone would survive thanks to them. After they will survive, they would come to the 10 people and spit on them, like they do today in some places that I go. Go to work! What are you learning Gemara all day? Go, you parasite! What are you doing? You're learning Gemara, you're learning with our tax money? Go to the army! That's what they said in Israel. They live thanks to them, and when they see them on the street, they beat them, they break their glasses in their face. Why? That's the world of lies. Hashem say, Alma de Shikra. Not only to bow down to them and say, thank you that you are tzaddik, you're protecting all of us. They spit at him. They see him on the street, they break him. They make flat tires in his car. Why? Because he learns Torah. Why? Because he doesn't go to work all day until 10 o'clock in the office. So they think, thanks to us, he eats. Because the government gives him money, a little bit, $180 a month. That's what the government gives to someone who learns all man Torah. And for that, they're almost chas v'shalom brotherhood war. War between religious and not religious is already happening. Hashem irachem. And what happened? When there's no unity between the Jews, Hashem say, okay, I have a way to make unity. The enemies around Israel become powerful. There's no time to fight brother and brother. If one brother fight with his brother, I want this, no, I want that, I want this job, why you give it to him, give it to me? You know how it is in life. When finally somebody comes to take the entire business away from the family, like IRS or FBI, who knows what, they have time to fight. They have to make one hand with the father, with everyone, and go to the war for their survival. Why? Before we realize we'll be on the street. There's no time to fight for nonsense. We have to unite. The Gemara say Achav and Izebel was very wicked couple, very wicked king. Every war he goes with his soldier, he wins. But very wicked, worshipping idols, stealing people's property. Horrible, but they win all the time. Why? All the wicked people were united. The wicked people wanted to make a Babylonian tower to go fight against Hashem. Hashem said, I have to mix their languages. They all speak one language. It's dangerous. What dangerous? No, let's say a billion people decide to build a beautiful, big, tall tower to go fight against Hashem. It's the biggest joke. And to say that Hashem was worried because they all speak one language, so let me confuse them and I mix their languages? Why Hashem is telling us this story in the Torah? To show you that even wicked people, when they're united, you cannot fight against them. We are lucky, the Jews. 6 million Jews live in Israel. That's it. 6 million, like in America. In New York, there are more than 3 million. 6 million Jews lives in Israel, surrounded by 2 billion Arabs, which almost every one of them has only one dream, to see a world without any Jews survived. And the 6 million, with so much danger, like we say in the Haggadah of Pesach, Omdim alenu lechalotenu, like one sheep David HaMelech say, surrounded by 70 wolves. Kol dor omdim alenu lechalotenu v'akadosh baruch hu matzilenu miyadam. What happened? When the Qassam rockets begin to arrive to Israel, all Jews become brothers. Sfaradi, Ashkenazi, religious, not religious, Hasid, soldier, Talmid Yeshiva. Everybody become brother. Stay in our shelter. Where we have a place to stay, come to us. Everyone run. Hospitals, food. People helping each other. That's why Hashem sent these rockets. You don't know how to behave like brothers, my children? I have to teach you a lesson. The enemies come to bother you. Now you don't have time for jealousy, for Lashon Hara, for politics, for hatred. No time. Why? You have to fight for your survival. So what's better? To learn the hard way or to learn the easy way? When I was a soldier, I'll never forget the smile of my commander when he used to say, "Ma shelo ba derech harosh." No one here was in the army, I see. I'll give you another chance. "Ma shelo ba derech harosh, ba derech haraglaim." What doesn't come through the head, come through the legs. Translation: when I give an order, your head does not understand, your legs would make you understand. 4 hours you run from 2 o'clock in the morning until 6 in the morning in the mountains with 500 kilo on your back until you you collapse already. You say, "You see, if you only understood first time that I say do it in 60 seconds, you wouldn't run 4 hours. Believe me, the next time when he says 60 seconds, everybody understands. That's the point. We could do it in a much easier way. We follow the Torah, we love each other, we help each other, we're not prejudiced, everyone together, everyone equal, beautiful. We don't want to learn. Mustafa and Ahmed make sure to teach us. That's what happened. And Hashem, where does it say it in the Torah? Who knows? Which parasha? Which parasha speaking about everything I just said? Parashat Bechukotai. Parashat Bechukotai. Right there. You're listening to me, you follow me, this, I'll make peace in the land, no one would bother you, you don't need security, you don't need army, you don't need billions of dollars for security, you don't need 3 years to kill yourself to protect the borders. I will protect everything. Venatati shalom ba'aretz. Ve'cherev lo ta'avor ba'artzechem. And if not, listen to the other page. If you're not going to listen to me, a list of problems. And this is where we live today. If somebody asks you why there's so much problems, the answer is there's no problem. If somebody asks you why Hashem gives us so many punishments, not 1 hour. This, unfortunately, I wish I was lying. I wish. There's not 1 hour that I don't get an email or a text about a new tragedy. On the way here in the afternoon, I went to speak to a school today in Hank. On the way there, someone from Montreal called. "Did you hear what happened yesterday?" she said. I said, "Where?" She said, "In Muncie." I got very nervous. "It's my hometown. I said, "No, what happened?" She said, "8 years old boy, religious boy, a tree went through his throat. And his critical condition in respiratory, mamash moments before that." I said, "No, I don't listen to the news. I'm so busy with the people all day and all night. I didn't hear it yet." I didn't even hang up with her. Another case, and another problem, and another one, and another one. There's no end to it. Mamash, horrible what's happening. Now, if somebody asks you, why Hashem is doing it? Why? Why is punishing us so much? What's the answer should be? What's the answer should be? Hashem does not do anything to us. Nothing. He doesn't touch us. Everything happened to us, we take and bring it on our head. Here, I took it and I put the fire on my head. I took the knife and I stuck it to my stomach. I did it. Why you blame him? You say, "No, he made the knife." Yeah, he made the knife. But who took the knife and stuck it to himself in his stomach? We're doing it. We have a book of instructions. There's warning. Do not, do not, do not, do not. We do. Then why do you complain? There's warnings. The doctor told you, don't touch alcohol. Don't touch cigarettes. Don't touch drugs. Don't do ABCD. Gives you a list. Tibidic, sugar, this. You ignore him. Chas v'shalom, they have to chop the leg off. It's Hashem's fault. Why? They told you, don't touch sugar. Don't do this. Don't smoke. Ah, you tell me what to do? You're too strict. You're fanatic. What kind of doctor you are? You tell me not to eat sugar. That's how we sound. Today, who knows better than me? You cannot open your mouth in the lectures. You know how many warnings I got until finally this lecture took place? Not to be too strict here. Be easy on them, Rabbi. It's a problem. You know, they're going to say for years that you're scary, you're strict, you know. We know you're right. But they don't, maybe they get upset. Even Rabbi Ben Chaim himself spoke to yesterday. This is his word. "Rabbi, we have a wonderful community. Beautiful people. But go a little easy on them. Here, I'm telling you in front of the camera. Huh? Everyone say, Rama, Simon, Mishael. Easy, easy. We don't want to upset anyone. Why, Chas v'shalom, I would say it's not allowed to violate Shabbat. Chas v'shalom, it's in the Torah 12 times. But when Hashem say it, no one wants to deal with him. But when someone like me, oh, it's all his fault. It's crazy. Why? He says you should not kill. But you know it. Nobody annoys me when he say it. It's like a doctor, he says, don't smoke. Oof, you again. But you know he's not allowed to smoke. Why? It's the doctor's job. Today, we live in a generation that you cannot, that's what the Gemara said. One of the signs before Mashiach would come, no one would be able to say the truth of Hashem to anyone. No one would like to hear it. People who say, don't do this, don't do that, people will be tired of them. Oof, again he say what to do, what not to do. Give us nice jokes. Give us nice jokes, Rabbi. Tell stories. Okay, we can do that. It's a beautiful entertainment. The question is this what Hashem wants? I always say to people, why Hashem wrote half of the Torah rewards and the other half punishments? Why he couldn't hide the punishments to make it more pleasant for the ears? Why he say punishments in the Torah? Who gave him permission? Huh? Well, what is this, the nerve to write all kinds of punishments in the Torah? So let me teach you a trick. You know, you heard about Kabbalah, no? None of the Kabbalah is mentioned in the Torah. Why Hashem didn't write Kabbalah in the Torah? Because he didn't want every Jew to be a Kabbalist. 1 to 1,000, maybe yes. It's the secrets of the Torah. It's not for every person. You have to be a doctor. Forget about Kabbalah. It's not for you. Today we have a big problem. Every Baal Tshuva, before he knows Aleph Bet, become a Kabbalist. He come to his parents. What are you doing? Why you wash your hands like this? You have to go like this. Why you don't put the clean next to the bed? You Rasha. You know the sink is over there. You walk 5 steps. You know what it is? The Zohar say. Ask him what bracha he make on a juice. He doesn't know. But he already give. He thinks it's the Ben Ish Chai. Two little tefillin. Feet all day. He doesn't talk. I don't eat cream cakes anymore. You don't even know what Advil is. You want to be a brain surgeon? Especially the Sfaradim today. You know, it's very interesting. The Torah has 4 categories. Pshat, Remez, Drash, Vesod. Pardes. The Gemara says, Arba'a nichnesu la Pardes. 4 people entered the Pardes and came, survived. One of the Rabbi Akiva. He survived. He went to the highest secrets of Hashem. Highest. The Merkava, the chair of Hashem, 7 different heavens. Nobody knows the billionth of what Rabbi Akiva knew. Somebody asked, who is the greatest Jew ever lived? Everybody answered, Moshe Rabbeinu. The answer is, it's Rabbi Akiva. Why? Moshe Rabbeinu was very big tzaddik, humbled, everything perfect. But everything Moshe knew, Hashem took a CD and inserted it in his head. He didn't sit 50 years in yeshiva from morning to night to sweat for the Torah. He got everything in 40 days. A CD. Shht. Download. Paste. Finished. That's exactly what happened. And then Moshe did a great job. Zikui Arabim, of course. Rabbi Akiva was 40 years old, doesn't know to write Aleph Bet. He had the brush. He was cleaning the horses of Kalba Savua. Kalba Savua, one of the wealthiest people in Israel. He has horses. He brushed the horses. Divorced with a kid, 40 years old. If Rabbi Akiva would be today, there's not one yeshiva in the Jewish world would accept him. Any yeshiva would come, excuse me, can we help you? He said, yeah, I want to learn Torah. How old are you? 40. What is this boy? It's my son. Oh, you married? Yeah, divorced. 40 years. You know Aleph Bet? No. What is your job? I clean the garbage in 42nd Street. I clean the horses in, what's the name there? The Plaza Hotel. You know those horses, the old horses? I brush the horses. The Rosh Yeshiva say, listen, before you come to the Yeshiva, please go see Dr. Eisenberg. Who is Dr. Eisenberg? A psychiatrist. Maybe check something. Maybe you have high fever or something is not right by you. They wouldn't accept him. But in the old days, the world was pure. When Rabbi Akiva went to learn with the little children in Yeshiva, they accepted him. Age 40, he started. He died 120. Perfect, ultimate tzaddik. And the biggest Kabbalist. Until Moshe Rabbeinu saw in his vision Rabbi Akiva, he asked Hashem, why you give the Torah by me? He deserved to give the Torah. And the end of the lecture, Rabbi Akiva said, everything I taught you came to us from Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe didn't understand him in his vision. That's how big he was. So, today, we have Sfaradi. Sfarad. What's Sfarad? Spain. What Sfarad is, we have Pardes, Pshat, Remez, Drash, Vesod. Pshat, it's the simple understanding of the Torah. Remez is all the hints and the clues. Pardes, Dalet is Drashim, Midrashim, secrets behind the scenes. And in the end, Samich, Sod, the secrets of Hashem, Kabbalah. First, you learn all the Chumash, the Mishnah, Halachot, Gemara. You finish everything. Midrashim, Gimatriot, everything. You're done with everything, you begin Kabbalah. Today it's not like this. Today, two months ago he became Shomer Shabbat. All of a sudden he has book, Tanya, Likute Moharan, Ari, Shar HaGilgulim, Ari HaKadosh. So what do you do, Moshe? What is this? How old are you? 22. Why are you having such Kabbalah books? Why? My rabbi is a big Kabbalist. Yeah, your rabbi learned 50 years, whatever. You only 2 months, Shomer Shabbat. But not only that, he comes to his parents, to his father. What kind of this you are? You're doing this, you know, this, that. And he breaks the family. Why? He doesn't have an idea. So what's going on? This is Sfaradi. Sfarad. First, Sod. Right away, Kabbalah. Sfarad. Then Pshat. After he finished the Zohar, he wants to learn what bracha you make on a cookie. Don't mikveh 3 times a day. Pray on the grass. Do this. Don't do here. You get married, you must be outside. Don't be under the building. Fine, if it was Rabbi Ovadia, Rav Mutzafi, fine. But who is this? This is the beginner. I want to tell everyone, please, to get it, that we have something effective from this night. Everyone, Baruch Hashem, who is already Baal Tshuva here. And everyone who soon will be Bezrat Hashem. You do not do anything on your own. You have to have a reasonable rabbi that knows your level and has to speak to you to your level. Every Monday I learn with a doctor. There's a doctor in Forest Hills Hospital. I learn with him one-on-one from 7 to 8:20, and then I go to my lecture. He listens to my CDs in the car. He said to me, I don't understand. It's like there's two you. There's you of the CDs, and when I sit with you, you tell me such easy things to do. You never say the things you say on the CDs. So I say to him, when I speak in the CDs, I have to teach the people what Hashem wants a Jew to be. I have no permission to modify the Torah. I have to say what Mechalel Shabbat is. I have to say what a thief is. I have to say what a not modest woman is. I must say it. If the people won't hear it, everyone is afraid to say it. No one has the guts to say it. It's not good for the business. If you tell people the sins they do, they don't want to donate. They only want to donate to someone who kissed them and say, you're a big tzaddik. Right? Because he donates. No. You have to say the truth. The truth is above everything. So what happened? Now when I sit with you, I know your level. I know you're just starting to keep Shabbat. I know you have tremendous pressure from your work. If I'm going to start telling you the maximum in halacha, in 3 months you go back to be the way you was, and I lose you for life. I already made that mistake one time in my life. The idea is never to repeat the same mistake. I met a Georgian guy, businessman, and I made him religious against all odds. He didn't know nothing. One law he did not know, nothing. Grew up mamash, like completely out of Judaism. And then he became secular again. You know why? Because I told him, why are you coming out of the bathroom and you're not washing your hands and don't say Asher Yatzar? So 4, 5, 6, 10 times I told him, he lost his patience and he disappeared. And I say to myself, ah, you see how experience in life is critical? If I had the experience I have today, I'd never make a beep about Yis Asher Yatzar. Mitzvah, the Rabbanan, he doesn't say it. Well, wait 5 years. It's not so urgent. We have to focus on the 3-4 critical things. Chilul Shabbat, kosher food, tefillin 2 minutes a day. Don't tell him go to Minyan 3 times a day. Definitely don't tell him come 5 o'clock to Nets. He will come 2 weeks and then you'll never see him in shul for the rest of his life because he's not ready to be a brain surgeon. He's only in the level of learning about Tainanol. You don't jump to this. It's big mistakes. It's happened to greater rabbi than me. But I learned from experience. I deal with so many thousands of people every year. I see how people react always the same. Today I say the same thing I used to say 15 years ago. But with a smile and many apologies before. The message is the same message. 15 years ago, 2 out of 100 were willing to listen. Today, 98 out of 100 listening. Why? Because we changed the strategy. Say the same thing with a smile and many apologies. Forgive me, I didn't write the Torah. I wish I can hide it. I wish I wouldn't have to say it. But you are my brothers. You are my sisters. I have an obligation. I'm standing in front of you. I don't say it. One day you come to me and say, you're not fair. We sat 2 hours listening to you. You couldn't tell us that what we do is wrong. So before we finish, we came to speak about one thing, not necessarily in this community, but it also exists in this community. And like I said, no community is perfect. Nowhere. Even the most religious communities in the world have problems. Maybe different kinds of problems, but unfortunately have problems. A person that wants to be righteous has to remember that the Torah, it's like a coin with 2 sides. There's mitzvot between you and God. There's mitzvot between you and society and people. Not only Jews, goyim also. There's no permission to steal from the goyim. No permission to disrespect them. When goyim died, like the children in Oklahoma now, 2 days ago, I don't know, 20, 30, 50 died. There are some foolish Jews who are, I don't know what goes through their mind. They're not seems to be upset. It's not our brothers. What is it my business? You're wrong. The Torah says, "Verachamav al kol ma'asav." Even when a dog dies, Hashem is upset. Even animals. Hashem says, before you eat, you have to feed your animals. In a Holocaust, there was one rabbi on the way to the gas chambers. And his friend Jew was not on the train yet. He was still free on the other side of the fence. He told him, Moshe, do me a big favor. I left my chickens in the backyard already since yesterday. I'm locked here. I didn't give them wheat to eat. Go to my house, give them food. 1 hour he'll be burned in the gas chambers. He was worried about the chickens in his house that they didn't eat today. Why? Because he knew Torah. When the Egyptians were drowning, the angel wanted to sing to Hashem. They were very happy that the enemies of the children of God are destroyed. Hashem said to him, "Maasei adai tovim bayam v'atem omrim shira." I created this Egyptian goyim. They are destroyed now and you want to sing? That's why we don't say Hallel. Why? Because the angel wanted to say and Hashem said, keep your mouth shut. Don't dare to sing. Why? Who are dying? The Nazis are dying. The Nazis, the Egyptians were Nazis. They took babies and killed them in the pyramids. A live baby, and they put cement on his face and killed him. They destroyed us. They tortured us. They mentally destroyed us. 210 years of slavery in a worse condition. So now finally they're paying the price. So the prisoners who finally came to freedom, they want to sing a little bit. A little bit Gola Sangam. What happened? What's the problem? Hashem said, be quiet. That's what the Torah teach. Bin fol oivecha al tismach. When your enemy collapse, don't make a party. You know in your heart, everyone in the end get what they deserve. It's not a reason to be happy. Brothers and sisters, Jews. How can it be that one Jew is happy that another Jew has a problem? How can it be? If you're a lover of Hashem, when another Jew suffers, you have to feel the same pain in your heart. You must. It's an obligation. No se ba'olim chavero. What's the competition? Who has a better car? Who has a better house? Who is smarter? Who has a better wife? What's all this nonsense? It's like kindergarten. People who have no brain, that's how they behave. Someone who knows that Hashem gives everyone exactly what he deserves. Everyone gets exactly what Hashem wants him to have. If he doesn't want, he takes it in a minute. Things change in life. Things is a roller coaster. What's the point of a person that will be jealous with another person's job? Hashem gave you this test, and he gave him this test. One person is poor. His test is not charity. That's not his test. That's why Hashem didn't give him millions. He has to survive barely. His job is to live in poverty and to work on his emunah. Another person, Hashem gave him $200-500 million. What? To eat caviar all day? To drive in a private jet? To go on vacation every 2 weeks? That's what we think sometimes. No, my friend. I gave you the money, picadon, like a banker, to save my children. You can save them. Every dollar can save Jews that are completely lost. Intermarriage, every night here in New York, 30 Israelis marry non-Jewish women. Every night here in New York alone. With $1 million a year, you would be able to save half of them every day if you reach to them and give them one CD. I have a CD about intermarriage. I spoke in Brooklyn. I had 150 people. I won't be exaggerating if when I spoke about the intermarriage according to the Torah and Kabbalah, half of the people that were crying, guys and girls, because they all married to non-Jews or on the way to marry to non-Jews. And some of them went out to cry outside. I see half of my audience is crying when they realize where they're heading to. How they cutting 3,300 of their parents who gave their life not to leave the Torah. And in 1 second they sold Hashem for a penny. And they realize what they just did. But sometimes it's already too late. You miss the train. How many Jews know that when they marry a non-Jew, their children unfortunately is not Jewish, and one day when they die, they don't go with them to the same place. They spend $1 million on each kid for college, another $2 million to help him in business. In the end, they come, Hashem, where are my children? He said, which children? He said, I have 4 children. I gave my life for them. Hashem said, I'm very sorry, I don't know who are your children. You are my son, and they belong to a different nation. Banim atem la'Hashem elokechem. Aba min agoya karu ibna. How many Jews know it? 1%. 1%. Most Jews, it's not evilness. It's not that he wants to get Hashem angry. It's not that he does on purpose. No. He fell in love with her. She's a nice woman. And that's it. And he doesn't understand this Torah, there's a boss, and the boss made rules. It's not what we want. It's what we have to do. I wish I can make up any laws I want for everyone to be happy. But I'm not God. And none of us is. So before we finish, please remember one thing. Hakinah, ha'ta'ava ve'akavod motzi'im ta'adam min ha'olam. That's what Hashem says. Hakinah, jealousy. Ta'ava, desires. Kavod, honor. Ego. Destroying the eternity of a person. Destroying the eternity of the person. Every time the Torah speaks about olam, obviously life of eternity, not 20 years here. Now remember, I said before, there are 3 kinds of jealousy. One, positive. I'm jealous with the rabbis. I'm jealous with the rich man who gives charity and thanks to him thousands of people learn Torah. From him I'm jealous. I'm jealous from a person that saves lives every day. Yes, that's no problem. It's not a sin. To be jealous with someone who does mitzvot, it's mitzvah. Ki inatzov, Hashem wants this kind of competition. Without putting anyone down. I'm better than you. No, that's not the point. Oh, he's learning all day Torah. Why am I not learning like him? Let me learn from him. Let me copy him. Let me. One day I'll be something. No problem. It's legal. Now there are 2 kinds of negative jealousy. 2 kinds. When a person see that somebody else has something and he doesn't have. So this is what he say to Hashem. Dear God, my friend Moshe just got a wonderful job. He's going to make a lot of money this year. I'm very happy for him. You know I'm happy for him. But what about me? It's not fair. We went to the same school. We cousins. I also want. You have plenty. Give me also. That's. He doesn't wish bad to him. He's really happy for him. But he also wants for himself. That's a sin. But there's a much, much bigger sin. He has plenty. And his friend finally got something. And his heart is burning. Why are you upset? Micha, why are you upset? My cousin, what with him? He made a great deal. It kills him. Why it kills you? Why it kills him? Because he wants everything for himself. What's desires? What are the three major desires that a man has in life?
Food, money, and positions.
Food, money, and women. Which one is the worst?
Money.
She say money, he say women.
Ego.
Food, money, and women. Which desire is the worst?
Money.
Nobody say food?
No.
Food, no?
Food, yes.
The answer is money. It's the worst, thank you. But why? Why? If a person wants money, and a person makes sins with ladies is isur karet. Chas v'shalom, his soul gets cut. If he eats a lot, he doesn't get cut. If he wants a lot of money, he doesn't get cut. But Chazal say that's the worst. Why? Because it brings you down in every other aspect, every other territory. It takes you away from Hashem. You're so busy with this world, you don't have time to be religious. And even if you are, it's the lowest of the lowest level. Why? Do you have time for Hashem now? It's million times harder. That's why when a person has this nisayon and is close to Hashem, we got to ask him to give a bracha. And I want to tell you one thing. Why Chazal say it's the worst desire? When a person eats, he wants to eat all day. Eat non-stop. He just ate a very big meal. He's full. For the next 3-4 hours, he cannot eat. He will vomit if he eats. So 2 hours, he has off from the desire. So desire is on and off. On and off. Women, the same thing. Person go and make sins with women all the time. But when he just made a sin with a woman, for the next hour or 2 or 5, he's relaxed with his Yetzer Hara. Next few hours, the Yetzer Hara will begin again. But right now, there's a timeout. With money, there's not 1 minute of timeout his entire life. Wow. That's why Chazal say it's the biggest distraction. Money, just you made the first million, you became so much hungrier for the second. And now when you have 2, woo, what is this? What's a 2? My friend is 200, I have 2, you kidding me? Right away he's aiming to 10. Where does it say it? Yesh lo maneh rotzeh matayim, even if you gdol ador. Even if you're biggest chacham, this desire never
stops. Money also goes to vacation.
I want to tell you one thing. It's not a sin to have money. It's not a problem to have money. It's even very positive to have money. It just depends what you do with the money. That's all. Hashem wants you to have. He gave it to you. If he didn't want, you wouldn't have a penny. But Hashem expect and watch you very carefully to see what you do. You selfish or not? You help other people? You want to save souls? You want the Torah to be existed or not? You have the opportunity to help people of Hashem, the children of Hashem, but you don't care. Hashem is watching. He writes everything. You do for others, there's no problem. You can have a very big house. Guests coming, shul in the house, lectures. Hashem is very happy. I know some people that have nice houses, you cannot walk in. Take your shoes off, this, be careful, that, lasers, that, you get nervous. I'm afraid. What's going on? Okay, let me go already. Why? By mistake, maybe you make a scratch. Come on, you came to this world for eternity. I will finish with 5 minute story to give you a good taste in your mouth, and then we'll pray Arvit. Many years ago, I went to a restaurant in Queens Boulevard that had no customers. I made a deal with the owner of the restaurant, and slowly, slowly, I started to teach Torah in the restaurant to people. There were 4 guys who were working for 1 mafia Israeli guy. They used to have poker machines in those days. It was very popular until Giuliani came and smashed all of them. Before Giuliani, the Israeli used to make $60,000 a week cash from the poker machine, in average. I knew a few of them. A lot of money 15 years ago. It's like 100 today. A week, doing nothing. Just have poker machines. And they took Israelis to collect. When I started to speak to four Israeli guys, Divrei Torah, I found out they are collectors. When is the day of collection? Shabbat. I said to them, go collect on Sunday. No, Shabbat, that's the business, that's the rule. Shabbat is the weekly collection. I say, not allowed to work on Shabbat. Tell it to the boss. 15 years ago, nobody had cellular phone. I don't know if you know. Only if you were John Gotti. You had a big like suitcase like this. Wow. People bow down to you. That's a cellular phone. I remember I had a car worth $1,200. And I was an agent for a bank. Baruch Hashem was a very good salesman. Quickly, I made it quickly to the top. So the owner of the bank wanted to meet who is the new star. I was 22, 23 years old. No college education. How I got in, it's a whole big miracle. How I got in. You know, by the time they found out I don't even have social security, I was already the number one salesman. So they say, okay, listen. So the guy said, listen, he's a Jew. I'll put you on my social security. And then I found him shidduch. We became buddies. Okay. So he told me, what is this? I want to reach you. Go install the cellular phone. I said to him, what? He said, guy, go to this here. He gave me a card. Go in Astoria there in Queens Boulevard. I went to a store to install cellular phone. All the Spanish technicians were standing there and hilariously laughing. Jose, senor, come here. Why? They see a little tiny car. The cellular phone costs double than the car. That's how it was. Wow. All the car are fancy Mercedes over there. All of a sudden, a little Dodge, old car like this. Just started. And I went to install the $1,700 phone. The whole car doesn't worth $1,000. That was how it was. So they say it to the boss. The boss have two cellular phones. He come with a leather jacket, like this. You see right away, you get very nervous. After I convinced them not to work on Shabbat, the following week, when I arrived to the restaurant, he already investigated when I'm arriving. He was waiting for me outside. This head of the mafia. So he said to me, are you Mizrahi? I say, yes. I smell problems coming. But I say, hey, Baruch Hashem, I'm Queens Boulevard. Maybe he won't give me the punch in front of everyone walking by. So he grabbed me here and said to me, listen to me one time. Better understand this. Leave my guys alone. One more word you talk to them about stop working on Shabbat, it's not going to be good. So I said to him, what do you care if they work on Sunday? I don't understand. Did you hear me? Don't tell me how to run my business. It's not your business. Don't brainwash them. Be careful. I said, but Shabbat, you know, Shabbat is a covenant with Hashem. What, you're not a Jew? Sephardi Jew. What, you forgot your grandfather? I'm talking to his heart. Doesn't help. It's very, very tough guy. So he said to me like this. Listen good. Look how Hashem works. He said to me, who's going to pay them their salary? You? I pay them. I decide when they work. So I say to him, and who gives you the money to give them? You? You cannot do anything without Hashem. He looks at me like this. Hashem? Don't talk to me about Hashem. Just do what I told you. I'm warning you. So I told him, listen, good. I don't know how I had the guts. Today probably I would be afraid. I said, okay, senor, goodbye. I said to him, listen, if you get Hashem angry, he will close your nose for 1 minute and you drop dead. He definitely can take away all your money if he wants. He said, I'm not going to talk to you another word. I said what I had to say, test me. And he left. That's it. I didn't see him. Few months later, Hanukkah party. They tell me, come to Hanukkah party. It's a big club on the border of Queens and Manhattan and Brooklyn there, facing the Twins. That's before Bin Laden. Very fancy club on the water. A lot of tourists come. Huge place. Big party, disco. Hundreds of people. They make a Hanukkah party over there. I sit there in the table with some of the Kiruv activists. Then one guy comes to me, I want you to meet the owner of the place. I see, Mr. John Gotti became even bigger. Hashem, I have my plans, you have your plans. So he came in front of me, pretend he doesn't remember me. So we shook hands. Okay, a few more months gone, the Twins collapsed. the business, many millions of dollars that he invested to fix the place. He shut the place. He lost a lot of money over there. Then a few more months after the twins, I get a phone call from a girl, Israeli girl from Brooklyn. She say, I heard that you're a rabbi and you maybe can find me shiduch, soulmate. My name is such and such. I'm working in a restaurant in Brooklyn. And soon I'm going to be out of my job because my boss is going bankrupt. He lost all his money. And as we speak, she tells me he used to own this club. But after the twins, he lost the money. And he opened this big Japanese restaurant. He invested a few million dollars here. And that's it. He left with no, without a penny. Maybe another week or two, I'm going to get fired. So maybe you can also find me a job. So I told her, tell me the name of your boss is such and such. She said, yes, oh, you know him? I said, yeah, I know, I heard about him. Why Hashem sent me this waiter for shiduch? Why? Because Hashem wanted to show me just what you said, this is exactly what happened. And then all the poker machine collapsed, and he took all the money to the club, and the club collapsed, and he took it to that restaurant, and the restaurant collapsed, and he left with nothing, nothing, homeless. That's what happened. Why? A person think I'm going to cheat Hashem and I'm going to have extra blessing is dreaming. Just remember the last sentence for tonight. Nobody in the history of this world ever or will never lose anything, a penny, nothing, by listening to the creator of the world rules. If he said don't work on Shabbat, you can make millions of Shabbat. It's just temporary, the price, the bill will be served to you one day. Nobody ever did anything against Hashem and in the end was successful. It cannot be. It cannot be that a Jew would sacrifice his life for Hashem and will stop stealing, will stop cheating, will stop hurting people, will stop be jealous, will elevate his emunah, and in the end Hashem will bury him. Hashem is better than us, much better. Even us, even if I save the life of a Hamas terrorist, when he come to blow the synagogue where I pray, he see me, he won't shoot me. I saved his life 2 months ago. He will skip me, let me leave. Why? He knew I saved his life. He pretend he doesn't see me and he goes. Why? That's mandatory. Even a terrorist. Do you think Hashem is worse than him? That you do for Hashem and he's going to bury you? You stop working on Shabbat and Hashem take away your parnasa? You be loyal, you be a good husband, you be a good father, you don't jealous, you don't wish to anyone bad, you love everyone, you do for the community, and then in the end Hashem will pay you bad? Where is this nonsense coming from? So why it doesn't happen immediately? Because everything in this life is a test. If every tzaddik would get paid right away, even the Nazis will give tzedakah. Even they would keep Shabbat. Why? They see immediate result. If the wicked people will get punished right away, no one will make a scene. Who wants to steal 100 and run away lose 2? Who wants to insult a guy and get a punch to his face a minute later? No one would do it. Someone would be mechalel Shabbat and his car goes on fire. And the second person was mechalel Shabbat, his car goes on fire. Do you think anybody in the world will be mechalel Shabbat? No one. That's why Hashem mixes everything like a mixer. You think that you did good and you got bad. You did bad, you get good. Baloney, my friend. Hashem is not a liar. He's not sitting in Congress. A word by Hashem is a word. And we'll finish with a joke. One politician died, and he came in front of Hashem, and Hashem said to him, I'm very, very, I have a big problem with you. It's a catch-22. So the politician said, why? You are not religious, so you didn't keep anything. On the other hand, millions of people vote for you. And there's a rule by me, when a person dies, if many people are upset, so then it's a problem. It's a match here. I don't know what to do with you. Let me give you a special Visa card. And you go from one place to another, and you decide you want to go to heaven, you want to go to hell, it's up to you. So this guy thinking to himself, what is he thinking, that I would like to go to hell? Of course I want to go to heaven. But he say, where do you prefer to see first, heaven or hell? He says, of course, heaven. So he takes him to heaven. He sees Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shimon, Baba Sali, Rav Kaduri, everyone like this with books, the Ari HaKadosh. So, oh, so many religious people here. Oh, take me
me, take me out of here, I'm allergic. It's not for me. So you sure? Say, yeah, take me out of here. Maher, maher, show me hell. So he takes him to hell. Beautiful, yacht, jet ski, dancers, music, you know, a beautiful party. He said, of course I want to be here. So you sure? Sign here, sign here, sign here. So after he signed, he said, okay, s'il vous plaît, go. He comes, they open the curtain. He see, wow, Auschwitz. Like this, depressed, crying. Well, what's going on? Where is the jet ski? Where is the Swedish dancers? Hashem said that was before the election. Now it's happened. Before the election, you promised the whole world. After the election, you don't even pick up the phone. But Hashem is not like this. Thank you very much, Mr. Zar, to his wife. Hope we meet again soon. Tfilat Arvi. Thank you.